Great to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's featured guest, author and patriot, G. Edward Griffin. Well, G. Edward Griffin, author of several bestsellers, including The Creature from Jekyll Island, as all of our listeners know. He's also head of the Reality Zone with Joan Hunter and has been a freedom fighter for half a century. Welcome back, G. Edward Griffin.
Well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
I'd like the theme of today's discussion to be a review of your Creature from Jekyll Island in light of current economic events. You know, it's been over 20 years since you penned The Creature back in 1994, and much has happened since then. I think that's putting it euphemistically. Suddenly, terms like rehypothecation and corporate transparency our household parlance. I wonder if you could give an overview of whether or not you expected events to form as they have over the past two decades when you wrote the book.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. And the obvious answer is that I didn't anticipate how it would all turn out. I don't think anybody can, especially people like myself, I can't look into the future and tell how it's going to turn out. And in fact, I was very pessimistic, to tell you the truth, Chris, when I wrote that book. You know, it's a huge, monstrous thing. It's 600 pages, and I could have written another 600 pages. I spent 7 years on the project, and it was just one of those things that, oh, you wish you had never started it. And I had a couple of, I guess they call them the dark nights, in which I gave up the project. I thought, this is too big. I can't do it. It's beyond my ability. The scope is too large. And I just gave it up. Nobody's going to read this stuff anyway. And I'm wasting my life, meanwhile. But I couldn't. I left it. I walked away from it. And then a couple of months later, kept getting these urges, oh, I've got to finish this project, and I went back to it. So to make a long story short, when I finally finished that effort, I thought, well, now what do we do with it? Here's this book. So we decided to self-publish it. I didn't want to have any other publishers telling me, well, I think you ought to change this, and you know, this is not politically correct, and so forth. So I decided to self-publish the book, and I remember after we got delivery on the first printing, which was rather large, I remember turning to my wife, and I said, gosh, Pat, what have I done? We've got this garage full of books, and nobody's going to read the darn thing. So I was pessimistic all the way along that it was just something I had to do, but I didn't expect it to be a great success. I didn't expect it to be a world changer or anything like that. The success of the book, it came as a great surprise and, of course, a pleasant one to me. And it still amazes me at how this book continues to just go. We're in a forgotten exact number, but I think it's printing number 36 or something like that. I mean, it just keeps going, and we have never advertised the darn thing. It's one of those books where people read it, and they've had kind of an epiphany, and they say, gosh, I better get an extra copy or two and recommend or lend this to my friends. So that's how the book has mostly been distributed. And, of course, with talk shows like this one, people ask me to come on and talk about it, and people hear about it on the radio, and they go out and buy it. So the answer to the question is no, I didn't expect this to be a game changer or a world changer. I just thought it was something that had to be done, put into the historical record, and maybe in future millennia, as they unearth our present civilization underneath the dust of history, they'll find this book and say, hey, listen to this. These people were going through all these problems in those days, and they didn't solve the problem very well. I had hoped that maybe by future generations learning about the mistakes of our generation, that perhaps that would avoid the future from making the same mistakes. So even that, you know, it seems kind of uplifting and all that, but it's a pessimistic view that nothing's going to really change in our lifetime. So everything that's happened on the positive side, Chris, has been a total amazement to me. I've seen this go from a non-topic where people would say, well, you're a writer, huh? What do you write about? Well, I'm writing a book on the Federal Reserve. And you could see their eyes glaze over and say, you know, what is that? Who would write about that? And even more of a question, who would read about that? I've seen it go from that stage to the point now where it's a major political topic. It's something that people talk about and they think about, and many people even have an opinion about. Most people still aren't quite sure what the Fed is, but they get a pretty good idea by now that it's important. They have a pretty good idea that it's not working on behalf of the common man. And they have a pretty good idea that it's somehow tied up with the banks, and it seems to be helping the banks more than it is either the people or the nation. And there are a lot of people out there behind this movement to abolish the Fed. I never thought I would see that in my lifetime. So that's the answer to the question. It's just a continual amazement to me to see how things have changed in the last 20 years.
Well, it's certainly a classic by now. There's no question about it. And what a pleasant surprise that must be, given the 7 years that you invested into the project, as well as the less than sanguine outlook that you had. The garage, as you say, filled with boxes of unread tomes. But that's certainly not the case now. I mean, I know arguably you and Dr. Ron Paul have done more to, I think, educate and increase awareness. I mean, there's been so many people in the field over the years who've done their part, people like Alex Jones and others. But I mean, you and Ron Paul there share the title because it takes a whole new paradigm shift to open one's eyes. It's just a sea change of thought. So why don't we pose a set of different questions, more thought-provoking ones? For instance, let's look at the creature now, given more current topicality. We know that the central bank, the ECB, had to issue negative interest rates, for example, just to entice people to give them their money and whatnot. I mean, zero lending rates and negative lending rates. Isn't this just a byproduct of the creature as it roams, you know, around the global economy, silently wrecking havoc? The things we've never heard of before, like negative interest rates and zero interest rates. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think that's absolutely a good summary there, Chris. It's a logical extension of what you would expect to happen. Once you understand the basic principle of what the Fed is, what its goal is, who it serves, you know, what its mission is all about, people still have trouble with that because they, you know, we live in kind of a mythical world where very little of what we believe is really based in reality. We have all these fantasy ideas. I won't go into them. You can imagine they're everywhere you look. One of them is, you know, the obvious one that people are beginning to wake up to now is that, you know, the old joke about, oh, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. You know, well, there was a time when people really believed that. You know, they thought that government was created by the people, for the people, and of the people, to help the people. And they really believed that. And now the truth, the reality is coming more to the front. I think more people are waking up that the government is, regardless of what it was designed to be, and regardless of what it might have been at one time, has been pretty well captured by a predator class. I think of most of the politicians of the world as being primarily just con artists. They've learned what they have to do and what they have to say to rip off the public and do it legally. And it's a good game, you know, if you can play it right. And these people are very good gamers. So that's one of the myths. And well, and part of that myth is the fact that our money supply is, you know, is in the hands of good people, in the hands of people who have nothing but the best interest of society, best interest of their fellow man, the best interest of the country and of the world. And that includes the politicians and the bankers. We trust those people. Well, that's, you know, once you understand, as you will understand, if you ever read that book that I wrote, you'll understand that that is a myth, that that is not what the Federal Reserve is all about. It's basically a cartel. It's a banking cartel, nothing more or less than a banking cartel, no different than an oil cartel or a banana cartel. Just, it's a banking cartel. And this cartel has so much power because it creates money, and money is power. And since the bank now has been given the authority to create money, they can create an unlimited amount of it, which means they have an unlimited amount of political power because they can influence politics from the more direct means of simply buying politicians to the more indirect means of influencing the media and society at large, so that only compliant politicians who are compliant to the goals of the cartel are going to receive favorable media attention. They're going to receive campaign donations. Only the compliant politicians will be the successful politicians. So through that dual medium of influence, the banks now really are astride the world, the bankers. And it looks, on the surface, as you casually read your newspaper or look at the television set, it looks like, you know, the government is regulating the banks. But in reality, once you really see the picture, it's the banks that are regulating the government. And it's a reality. So once you understand that basic reality, and then you ask, well, what's happening today with negative interest rates and all these weird things going on, the bailing out of the banks? Well, sure, of course, who's running the show? The banks. Who do you expect they're going to bail out? They're going to bail themselves out with taxpayer money and make it look like it was a big humanitarian effort to preserve the economy and all that sort of thing. So back to the real issue here is, once you understand the reality of central banking, that this is a kind of a con game, but it's a con game at the highest level, because it's not just fooling people, it's plundering people. And it's, in a very real sense, it's taking away their liberties, their freedoms, their hard earnings, everything. It's just enslaving people. That's what lies at the end of this process, if you have the courage to look far enough into the future. And so it's a logical progression of what the reality of the Federal Reserve is. Once you understand it, then none of these things that seem to be paradoxical really are. They're just what you would normally expect to happen.
Now, this is interesting, because you have been an outspoken critic of capitalism for decades. I mean, you gave a well-known speech back in 1969, and you obviously have a solid understanding of the mechanics behind our so-called, let's call it a pseudo-capitalistic system. Actually, now it's really, isn't it more the embers or the remnants of a pseudo-capitalistic system? Do you believe that what we have today, those embers, those vestiges, can be rebuilt or reformed to create a working system? Or has this capitalist ideal failed us?
Well, I'm glad that you added the word pseudo, because I have never been a critic of capitalism. I did produce hasten to emphasize real capitalism. I have written a documentary film called The Capitalist Conspiracy some years ago, but in that film, it was made very clear that what we call capitalism today, and that was the subject of the film, what we call capitalism today is not traditional capitalism at all. It's a form of collectivism. It's no different in ideology. It's no different than communism or fascism or Nazism or any other form of collectivism. What happened is that the collectivist ideology, you know, infected the United States and most of the world. And they allowed the shell to remain, and we still, you know, pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands, but the republic is long gone, been replaced by a democracy. The appearances remain, and the outside shell remains. We still call this a capitalist system, but if you understand what capitalism really means in the traditional sense, there's none of it left, or even, well, you might say the embers, okay. But I have always been a fierce advocate of true capitalism. There are basically two kinds. There's free enterprise capitalism, which is, in my view at least, the traditional form. And then there's monopoly capitalism, which is what we have today, if you want to hang on to that word capitalism. It's not capitalism at all. It's just monopoly. I just take the word capitalism off. It's monopoly. And it still uses the word capitalism to condition the public into hating capitalism, which we don't have, you know. So, yeah, and now the basic question, though, that you ask is, can we rebuild a system of free markets and free enterprise and liberty, freedom of choice? Is that possible once you have allowed it to be infected and destroyed, diseased into out of existence, I might say? Yeah, of course it's possible, because people build these structures in the first place, they can rebuild them, but it takes a tremendous amount of resolve. It takes a lot of understanding, which I don't see happening right now, at least not in the public school system. They don't teach this stuff. You know, they're the schools are paid for by the collectivist system, governments. And so the schools teach collectivism as the highest ideal. And, you know, the greater good for the greater number and all of those other slogans, which I was taught when I went through school, and I thought they were just dandy. I believed them. And so the public today is totally imbued with this disease that's killing them. They like the disease. They think it's the right thing to do. They think it's, you know, collectivism is correct. They think it's humanitarian. They think it's fair. It produces the highest level of justice and all of these things because they don't really understand the essence of, you know, what's happening and how it's really the cause of most, if not all, of the great woes of today. And yet they're out there still saying, down with capitalism, and let us have socialism, and let us have, you know, something other than capitalism. And they're calling for more and more of the same poison that's killing them. So that's my view on that, and I appreciate your asking me that question, because I think people have to get it very clear in their minds that the system we have in the world, or at least in the Western world today, even though we call it the capitalist system or the free world and all of that thing, it's not that anymore. There's very little difference in ideology between the West and the East. All of the major nations of the world have gone collectivist. There's no difference, essentially no important difference, between communism, collectivism and that form, or socialism or Nazism or some of the other isms that we have in our present system under different names. So until people understand the basic ideology behind those labels, then there's not much hope. But one of the things we're doing and putting all of our effort into right now is to create an understanding of these issues through a structure we call Freedom Force International, which is the sponsor of the Freedom Academy. And all of these things are geared at enlightening our fellow passengers on this spaceship called Earth and enlighten them to these basic principles so that we can rebuild. I think things are falling apart. I don't see any change in the major direction in Washington or in Moscow or Peking or London. All of those major political centers of the world are still firmly in the hands of collectivists. So I don't see any quick turnaround. I know that's going to happen someday, and we're laying the foundation for that turnaround by creating a body of knowledge and a movement that can build from the bottom up, slowly. It has to be slowly. It can't be done quickly because it requires the understanding and the support of the population. And until that happens, individual leaders, they can stand up and offer themselves as leaders, but no one will follow because they don't understand. So that's our job. And I think it can be done. And that's what we're working on right now, is to bring it about.
I would like to pose one final question, if you will, that I think really ties everything together here. And you've addressed this in the past, so I think it's something that you'll feel comfortable with. Are the elite concerned? Are they worried by our internet and all these other media outlets that have started to expose the powers that be, the pyramid of their power, to make them more transparent, exposing them? Are they concerned by the awareness that the everyday American or listener, as you say, it's going to take one person at a time, you know, not the herd? Are they concerned that we are beginning to be more aware of their agenda?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind, Chris, that they are aware of the fact that the population is becoming more and more aware of their real agenda. They're aware of it, and they don't take it lightly. But I hesitate to use the word concerned because they have anticipated that from the very beginning. I mean, they're social engineers, they're politicians, they understand these grand movements of history. And long ago, they looked ahead and they said, you know, someday we're going to have to deal with a very unruly population. And so instead of wringing their hands, they say, okay, that's what we have to deal with. They lay plans and they start to maneuver and prepare. That's what these FEMA camps are all about. You know, it's not that they understand that this is coming, and all of the the political systems of the world. Just read the United Nations documents on this. They're all predicting major civil unrest, and we see that increasing almost every month now. And they've been predicting this for quite a few years. I've been collecting reports from the United Nations and various governmental units around the world anticipating this, and they're talking about how this is how we're going to handle it. We're going to have passed this law and passed that law, make this illegal, put people in prison if they speak against the government. We're going to have these concentration camps, and we have to re-educate them, and we're going to fund this. And they're just, it's part of the plan, in other words. They're looking forward to it, in a sense. In fact, I'm a little paranoid about it, but I think what they're doing is they're actually hoping that there'll be some real hotheads in the population who will do some outrageously terrible things. I think they're really looking forward to riots and death and destruction, so that they can use that as an excuse for martial law. Because martial law is the only way that they can keep this thing together, and so they need an excuse for it. So that if I were on their side, I would say, hey, well, let's go out and trigger some real violent action so we can look like we're the saviors when we institute martial law rather than the conquerors. So to answer the question, I don't say that they're concerned about it. They're aware of it, they're planning on it, and they're doing everything they can to take advantage of it.
Well, I would say it's cuisine for cogitation, the truth. Is there any contact information that you'd like to share today?
Well, thanks for that, yes. We have two branches to our operation. One is the think tank, and the other is the sales organization, where we sell books and recordings. We sell information. And the think tank side, we don't sell anything except ideas. There's no charge for that. So the think tank side would be Freedom Force International, which I mentioned a moment ago. That's where we are building an organizational movement globally to reverse the tide and do something about it. So anybody that wants to get involved and really make a difference in the world, this is where you should go and see what we're up to. So the link there is freedomforceinternational.org, O-R-G for organization. So freedomforceinternational.org. Now, for the informational side, that's realityzone.com. And that's where we have books and video recordings and audio recordings, a little over 100 different items, I think, all of which are incredibly important.
Thanks so much for your time, and please return to GoldSeek.com Radio.
All right, thank you very much for the invitation.